Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Tuesday afternoon. We always enjoy our conversations with our next guest. Carl Ravish is on the line with us from ESPN. Carl, how you doing?
I'm doing as well as everybody else. I imagine that most people are in positions where they're saying the same thing. So I would put me right in the same group as everybody else.
Yeah, it's hard to complain, right, because everybody's in the same boat. We're all going through this together.
Hard to imagine, too, is what, a week ago Thursday, we were sitting there interviewing Greg Sankey in Nashville at the SEC tournament, and no one, I think, could imagine where we would end up even from that day when they were canceling tournaments and canceling the SEC tournament.
It's interesting you said that, Carl. We had Joe Fisher on in the first hour, the play-by-play voice for Vanderbilt, and, of course, they were the last game played on that Wednesday night, and I said, what was kind of the mood in Bridgestone Arena? And he said, you know, they had made the announcement at halftime that there's going to be no more fans and people had booed. And then he said he ran into Greg Sankey after the game and said that so they knew that everything was going to get canceled. And Greg at that point was just – told him, well, hopefully you'll have a baseball game to call. But he said he didn't get a good vibe from Greg Sankey, the commissioner at the time, that that was the case, and then we know how quickly all this has escalated, right, where everything would indeed shut down. We've had some fun here with our listeners. You're a good guy to ask this, of having them tweet out pictures of their favorite sports memorabilia that they have at home or in their office or their man cave or what have you, and so we're getting great responses. What's a piece that you have that you've always treasured? What would that be? How would you answer it?
Well, I grew up in New England, so I was a Boston sports fan. I was born in 65. You could do the math. But, I mean, during the time where I was, you know, at home every night during high school, the Celtics were the team to watch, and Larry Bird was my favorite athlete of all time. So I have four different things in my basement, man cave, now kids' room so they can play video games. But it's a it's a Larry Bird signed jersey. It's a Bobby Orr signed jersey. I covered the PGA Tour back in the late 90s and early 2000s. So when Tiger was busy winning majors, I would, after each of those events, have him sign a small poster from Pebble Beach or from St. Andrews. I have those, and there's a Muhammad Ali lithograph. So those are the four names that are down there: Woods, Bird, Orr, and Ali. And I guess on a personal level, it would probably be Bird, because he was so influential in the way that I came to appreciate sports, team sports, effort, attitude, grit, not necessarily being the greatest, most skilled athlete, but certainly doing a lot of other things which make you the best. And, you know, you're loyal to the team. I know the Bulls fans will argue Jordan, and the Lakers fans will argue Magic Johnson, and depending on your generation, you'll say Bill Russell, but you know, each of these individual athletes hold a special part in your heart because they resulted in real positive memories and attitudes. So Bird would be mine, and that shirt would be it.
Wow, that's outstanding. How difficult do you think this is going to be in trying to figure out what's the appropriate time and how concerned? I mean, everybody's concerned at this point, but baseball was just to start the beginning now. And so, their season has been put on hold. What do you think we're facing for all the baseball fans out there listening, like us? How long do you think this is going to take?
Yeah, it's impossible to answer that with any amount of certainty. I mean, we're supposed to be, you know, in ESPN and then Thursday at Citi Field doing a Baseball Tonight show at 12:30 in the afternoon Eastern time and then a game at 1. So, you know, these next 48 hours are the time where we were all supposed to be celebrating opening day for Major League Baseball and won't be. All I can say is it's just I know that all sorts of considerations are being discussed. As to when it comes back, do you start with an all-star game? Do you start with some type of exhibition? How long is it going to take once the players are back at camp in order to ramp up? Do you then, as my friend Eduardo Perez has suggested, do you just have games in Florida and Arizona because that's where all the training camps are and you don't need to move people? Do you do it with or without fans? I don't think there is an answer. I do think, like you guys have suggested, that the challenge is not necessarily going to be some declaration from your federal or local, state, county officials to say we're moving back into some semblance of normalcy. It's going to be to what degree does that apply to baseball, meaning fans in the stands, meaning players travel. There are so many different factors that go into that as opposed to just going back to work. And that's, you know, that's going to be a challenge that's going to probably change 1,000 times between now and the time we play the first game. I think from an athlete's perspective and from a fan's perspective, I would imagine that like most sports fans, you know, I'm anxious like they are just to see any live event. I don't think people would require that you be there in person. They would just like to see activity in action and be able to be invested in a new live event. I mean, I think that the sports networks are all doing an amazing job of filling programming with great sports events, but you know, many people have seen them, obviously, and we would just like to see something new. So my answer, if I were being asked to do it when I knew it would be safe, I wouldn't do it based on having people in the seats or the stands. I would just do it as a way to provide, you know, people who are at home an opportunity to see something, hear something, read about something if they don't have to see it in person. I think that would be a monumental step, and then you slowly and gradually move towards getting people in the seats.
We're talking to Carl Ravitch from ESPN, and Carl, that's an interesting take. With that in mind, in the meantime, we are seeing a lot of classic games. Number one, right. Do you enjoy watching the classic games? Do you like going back through them? And is there one that you've caught here the last week or so that you maybe found yourself glued to and say, you know what, I didn't remember all this, and I really enjoyed this particular one?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of them. You know, and again, I would go back to the Bird Celtics. There have been some great Celtics-Lakers shows on a 30 for 30. It's just always fascinating to watch folks when you grew up. You know, I'm talking about 1978 to 1990 with regards to being really invested in a local team as opposed to when you go to college and then you get a job in a particular market. I worked in Binghamton, New York, and then Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So, you know, while you're always a fan of the sports teams in the towns you grew up in, it is always interesting. You're watching the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird NCAA championship game where you realize, my God, there were actually other good players on those teams, or how good Bird really was on a team in which you're dealing with Greg Kelsers and Magic Johnsons and others of the world. Maybe it's a byproduct of, you know, being in your mid-50s. The details get a little fuzzier, and it's neat to be reminded of exactly what did happen as opposed to some fabrication of a memory where you're embellishing, like, oh, yeah, I used to walk to school with no shoes, and it was 14 degrees, and all those things that you hear from your grandparents and your parents. Well, I imagine when it comes to sports, those of us who witnessed so many of these things tend to embellish. So seeing all of those does remind you of, you know, and again, just how really good the athletes were even back then. How many times have we gotten into debates nowadays about could Bob Cousy be able to deal with LeBron James? You know, my answer to that question, and I'm sure you guys have had it brought up, is, you know, we can't compare Bob Cousy to LeBron James because LeBron James is a freak, but all the things that this particular generation has benefited from when it comes to exercise and food and all the things that they benefit from. The athletes of the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know, were just scratching the surface on. So a Larry Bird of 1980 would be very different than a Larry Bird of 2020. Doesn't mean that he's going to be athletically as gifted as the next guy, but he will have benefited from nutrition and from, you know, regimens and trainers and things that they didn't. So those are the comparisons I always find are very difficult to make, because I tend to go to, I can't compare, you know, Babe Ruth with Barry Bonds. Doesn't make any sense. But there is certainly something about those guys that would allow you to say they're different, and they're always going to be different because of the years that they played. So hard to compare, but yeah, there have been some. And I think having covered that PGA Tour, anytime Tiger Woods is playing at St. Andrews in 2000 or Pebble Beach, I'm in, because I was actually there, and I'd be honest, it would be hard for me to remember every single shot that that he made, and many of them were unbelievable.
By the way, your mail was there, Carl, just so you know. Your mail got
it. Sounds like it.
Is that right?
But, Carl, by the way, we're talking to Carl Ravitch from ESPN. And, Carl, another thing that I've had a chance to do is sort of introduce some characters from sports history to my son, who would have otherwise no idea who some of these guys are. One that came up the other day, and I'm sure being from where you are, you can remember this well, and that's the rise, the quick meteoric rise and then fall, unfortunately, of Mark the Bird Fidrich. Like, my son would never have any idea who he was, but the, you know, MLB Network took a whole day, played the documentary, and then had that great Monday Night Baseball game that he pitched, where he really, you know, showed himself what he could do to the country. I mean, guys like that, it's great to be able to appreciate those moments, especially while we have a little extra time on our hands.
Without question. Like, I mean, there's some of the characters I've come across that people, you know, probably wouldn't remember, but whether it be Manny Ramirez, who, of course, was as great a hitter in his prime as you could imagine, and yet would have hundreds of thousands of dollars of uncashed checks in his glove compartment, things that you couldn't imagine anybody doing. Dennis Oil Can Boyd was pitching for the Red Sox, and he was playing a game in Cleveland and talked about how challenging it is to pitch with the winds coming off of the ocean, which, of course, was a big lake, and there weren't any ocean winds. But those types of comments from athletes that you realize in context make zero sense are the types that you remember. Don Zimmer was another great one in the stories he could tell. Currently, Terry Francona is the greatest storyteller of all time. And, you know, that's the beauty of baseball, folks. They do have some photographic memories and some experiences. You know, one story about Francona, even when he was working with us, I don't know if you've heard this, but he and Tim Kirkchen were covering spring training for us, and one of the spots that they had to go stay in was at Walt Disney World, of course, Disney owning ESPN, and they were put up in Fort Wilderness. I don't know if anybody knows what Fort Wilderness is at Disney's Wide World, but it's one of these literal campgrounds.
Yep.
Some people love that, and that's how they want to spend their vacation while going on the rides at Disney. And they each had bunk beds, and at one point Francona thought that this was one of those episodes of Candid Camera, like this was a joke. Somebody was going to come into his room and say, "We're just kidding, you're actually at a different hotel." That didn't happen, so he called him and said, "Let's go outside and make a campfire and roast marshmallows." And that was one of his experiences at ESPN covering spring training. This is from a guy who used to travel in five-star hotels and things like that. So there are, look, most of these people, I think the great part about this, too, guys, is the social media aspect that we are now getting more and more used to seeing does give you a glimpse into people's personalities, which is really what I think we always try to do, you know, at ESPN and I'm sure other places, is to get to know the player. And these mic'd-up segments we did during spring training, you get to learn so much about people you wouldn't necessarily know. So, look, if there's a tiny sliver of the silver lining, it's that you get a chance to know the players as people as opposed to just athletes.
We're talking to Carl Ravitch of ESPN here with us, and you obviously do a lot of basketball games and also the baseball games, but how do you think, because I feel like the NCAA is in an impossible position to handle this because of eligibility and seniors that are missing out on the tournament. We've seen that spring sports, they're probably going to be granted another year of eligibility. But when it comes to basketball, what is the best way in your mind to handle this? Or is there a right way?
Well, you're right. It's very difficult. I would say if I were to have to make a decision, sort of be forced into it, that that the basketball season had virtually all but completed itself, understanding you're not playing in an NCAA tournament or an SEC tournament. But you had a season. In fact, you had your entire regular season that I would be in a position to say that for the basketball and winter sports, that the season is over, with all due respect, as troubling and as frustrating and as angry as you may get. I would land there. And with regards to the spring sports, I would allow them to, if they want to, have their scholarship for the next season. And if for 1 year, you know, the NCAA and these colleges have to bite the bullet and extend either roster sizes or the amount of scholarship money, you know what? You got to do it. And you know what? You can afford it. That's where I would land. They deserve the opportunity. This is not their fault, and they haven't had a season, which in a lot of cases means they haven't had a chance to prove themselves, which ultimately could impact, their ability to get a job. And that's still a small group we're talking about, but I think that with regards to spring sports, I would afford them the opportunity to return with those scholarships. Understanding we've already made pledges to incoming freshmen with scholarships. You know what? You're going to have to learn how to deal with it, and maybe those freshmen will stay an extra year or two in the sport that they're in.
Carl, Barrett Sports Media put out a field of 64 of the greatest sports center anchors of all time. You are a 3 seed in this, and I know a lot of people might associate you with Baseball Tonight and other things, but
right.
Long time on Sports Center. Your first round matchup against Michael Kim, how do you feel about it?
That's a good question. That's a really good point about, that's a high seed. I wouldn't have thought, given you're right about Baseball Tonight, which I've done since 95, but I was heavy SportsCenter flavor from when I got there in May of 93 and did overnight shows with Craig Kilborn, who I hope is on there and is a very high seed. But
he's also a 3 seed.
Oh, is he? I did so many SportsCenters and was in so many of those SportsCenter commercials. I love doing it. Wish we could still do it, but we kind of made a move that when you're involved in a particular sport, you kind of stay away from it and try to grow another crop of SportsCenter personalities. I would have no idea. I have great respect for Michael Kim and anybody who's on that list. If the next question were to give me the top four SportsCenter anchors that I've ever come across with, is Keith on there? Is Olbermann on there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a one seed.
Yeah, he's a one seed. He would be a one seed for me. I would say Stu Scott's going to be a one seed.
Well, you unfortunately, Carl, drew a tough bracket. You're in the Booyah region, and Stuart Scott is the one seed.
Well, he's a one seed, and unlike any other. That's what I would base mine on, people who did it differently than anybody else and did it really well. And Olbermann, Stu Scott, I think the other 3 seed you mentioned, Craig Kilborn. Maybe I'm partial to him since I did so many shows with him and was there when he started. Quick story about Craig Kilborn. After about a week and a half of working with him, and there's probably a heck of a lot of people in your audience who don't know who Craig Kilborn is, but about a week and a half after starting with him on these overnight shows, so we were doing shows from 2:30 to 3 a.m. Eastern time to serve the West Coast audience, long before ESPN had an L.A. bureau. I went into the boss and said, "I'm sorry, with all due respect, I can't work with him. Like he doesn't seem to understand sports. I'm not sure he even likes them." And to his credit, Steve Anderson, who was in charge, said, "Just be patient. Just be patient." And lo and behold, it sort of became the Felix and Oscar act. I was the straight guy. He was the incredibly funny, creative, acerbic, and huge, huge sports fan guy. Used to do every lead-in and somehow incorporate the name Pooh Richardson, and it became sort of a staple of his.
I remember.
He'd be one of my top four. And then you kind of get into the whole Dan Patrick, Chris Berman guys that did it at such a high level for such a long time, and I'm sure I'm forgetting about many, many people who are on there. Those three stood out to me because they were just unique. Olbermann, Kilborn, and Stu Scott.
Well, your nails is my favorite.
By the way, if I get so far to lose to Stu, I'd be happy to lose to Stu Scott. That's a win for me.
Yeah.
This is my favorite Craig Kilborn, Carl. I'm sure you remember this one. He's not your Vitas. He's not my Vitas.
Yes.
He's our Vitas.
Of course. He's our Vitas. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Craig would do. I mean, you guys have the Nashville Predators, so you got a whole bunch of hockey fans there. Craig was. I mean, one thing about him, he's a humongous basketball guy, and he knew all about football. He was not very well versed in hockey, so he would, instead of writing an on-camera lead-in about the Predators and the Bruins, he would say something to the effect of, "So you remember when you used to walk down the street and you try to go to your buddy's skating rink that he had in his backyard, if we were lucky enough, but then there was always this sort of odd guy that was hanging around in his backyard who asked if you would mind if you'd come back and he would tie your skates for you. Let's go see the Bruins and Predators." And that, again, those things made no sense to me, but that was Craig Kilborn in a nutshell, and it resonated. I mean, he was wildly, wildly popular, and I wish that the people that were actually voting on this were the people that actually got a chance to see him. He's a funny dude.
He was kind of a jerk in Old School, the movie Old School. I got to be honest. Kind of a jerk boyfriend.
I mean, some people would say he's a jerk. Other people would say he was true to his character. To me, that is who he was. I wouldn't look at him as a jerk. That's look in the mirror, think I'm really handsome and cool and good looking, and you move on. And he was that guy. He was beautiful to work with.
Oh, that's outstanding stuff, Carl. Always appreciate the visits. Be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, you guys. You too, and thanks for having me on. Stay well.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Carl Ravish from ESPN. We will come back. There was some really good stuff in there. We'll talk about it on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.